Will you turn to Matthew chapter 9? We began a series last Sunday, which will walk us through parts of the book of Matthew as we just look at the moments Jesus had with people. Jesus with people just like you and me. Jesus with people like the people we know in our neighborhoods and at work. Jesus with people. You'll find message notes inside your bulletin as well to help you follow along. We're going to read Matthew 9 and verses 35 through 38. The first couple of three verses review the previous two chapters, and that's what we're going to be talking about today. And then the last two verses sort of introduce the next chapter. So Matthew 9, verse 35, as we talk about today, the compassion of Jesus. Will you stand with me as we read God's word together? After we read, Jackie Blauvel is actually going to sing the introduction to my message this morning. Verse 35 of Matthew 9. Jesus went through all the towns and villages, teaching in their synagogues, preaching the good news of the kingdom, and healing every disease and sickness. And when he saw the crowds, he had compassion on them. That's what we're going to be talking about today, compassion. When he saw the crowds, he had compassion on them because they were harassed and helpless like sheep without a shepherd. Then will you read the last two verses out loud with me? Then he said to his disciples, "The harvest is plentiful, but the workers are few. Ask the Lord of the harvest, therefore, to send out workers into his harvest field." May the Lord do that, and may he bless his word to our hearts. The Lord bless you. You may be seated.
I would love to tell you what I think of Jesus, since I found in him a friend so strong and true. I would tell you how he changed my life completely. He did something that no other friend could do. No no other friends so kind.
Thank you, Jackie. Wonderfully well sung. I call it the heart behind the healings that we read about in verse 35 that we just started with. It said, Jesus went around through the towns and the villages, teaching in their synagogues, preaching the good news of the kingdom, and healing every disease and sickness. And then in the very next verse, Matthew 36, we come to the heart behind the healings, the Jesus who cares like no one else can care. And these amazing words, when Jesus saw the crowds, you can imagine he's been touching person after person after person, and then over the hill, another crowd. The overwhelming feeling he must have had in that moment. And when Jesus saw the crowds in the New International, in the NIV version that we use here, it says he had compassion on them. Something happened inside of him that identified him with them. It's called compassion. Even the English word compassion says a lot to us. It's the word passion. In fact, the word passion comes from another word that really means suffering. So when we sometimes talk about the suffering of Christ, we talk about the passion of Christ or the movie about his suffering, the passion. Passion, it's that very emotionally charged word. Then when you put the prefix C-O-M, come, in front of the word passion, come means with or together. In other words, here we see Jesus. He sees the crowds, and somehow deep inside, he is with them in their pain. Compassion. It's the ultimate, I feel your pain word. It's the ultimate word that when we tend to say it to people, it, to be honest, comes across trite. Sometimes when our friends are really hurting and we don't know what to say, we sort of clumsily say, well, I know how you must feel. And when you're really in pain, it's almost impossible to believe that anybody really knows how you feel in that moment. And so sometimes we say that too much because it just sort of trivializes other people's pain. But when Jesus says it, he is saying it with every sense of sincerity in the world. When he saw the crowds, he had compassion together with them in their pain experience in his heart. I like how the New Living Version translates that. When Jesus saw the crowds, it says he had loving pity on them. Same idea, except now we pick up a nuance of how compassion was translated in the Hebrew language of the Old Testament. In the Old Testament, written in Hebrew, the word for compassion is related to the word for a woman's womb. A woman's womb. Something so intimate and personal. And in essence, Matthew is saying no more could Jesus be detached from loving pity and care for the people around him as he beheld the crowd. No more could that happen than a woman could be detached from love for that life being nurtured within her own womb. It's a womb word, compassion. It means not self-righteous pity. It means not superior, cynical, look down your nose pity, but loving pity. This is the tender, life-giving, nourishing womb love that cares and wants to protect. Or my favorite is the King James Version, the KJV version in Old English of this, because it takes the one word and expands it into three words in English. When Jesus saw the crowds, he was moved with compassion. Say that with me. Moved with compassion. Now, the word is only one word in the Greek language that Matthew's writing here, but it's translated in King James three words, moved with compassion. Why moved with? Well, because, believe it or not, the actual Greek word that we translate compassion is the word we'd also use to refer to, and I'm sorry about this, your bowels. Because the ancients felt that the seat of emotion was found in the inner organs and especially the lower organs of the body. And we even carry that to this present day, that sense. Sometimes we'll say, you know, I could feel it in the pit of my stomach. There you're relating emotion to the inner organs and the bowels. Or sometimes more often we say, boy, I could feel it in my gut. Or if somebody does something particularly courageous, we say, boy, you sure had guts. Now, if you see somebody at work do something particularly courageous this week, please don't say to them, boy, you sure have bowels. You know, they might not quite get that. But we do use the word gut. Well, you have guts. Or if there is an experience that's especially heart-wrenching, we sometimes will say, that was a gut-wrenching experience. Like something wrenched and moved at the deepest, most foundational part of my being because of something out there. In essence, here's the stunning thing. Matthew, in describing Jesus, he's saying, here is God, and God was gut-wrenched when he saw the needs of the crowd that came at him. A God who gets gut-wrenched over people's pain. Or I like Eugene Peterson's paraphrase of the New Testament, The Message, where he simply says, when Jesus saw the crowds, his heart broke. His heart just broke. I mean, what more is there to say? When Jesus sees people's pain, his compassion means that his heart just breaks. It's no wonder that in the very next two verses, he goes into saying, you know, the need is so incredibly great that when you pray that there will be more people who carry my gut-wrenching, heartbreaking compassion and live it out. That's why this next week it's important to us to have a spring mission celebration as we do two or three times a year. And as we think about, especially beginning Wednesday night when we all gather together in the multipurpose hall, Wednesday night, Sunday morning, Sunday night, we're all focusing on the nation of Iran. President Bush called Iran part of the axis of evil in our world. But Jesus looks at Iran and his heart breaks over the need and hurt and lostness. And Jesus' heart just has to spill out, oh, that I had partners in compassion like this. For people, not people who size folks up and put them in classifications and through their prejudice and indifference just sort of excuse themselves from people's pain, but rather people whose guts are wrenched by people's pain and their hearts are broken. That's the kind of people that I want to walk because that is my heart. I heard a wonderful story just even in our church life this past Thursday morning. The Chamber of Commerce in Springfield has an event one Thursday morning a month. It's a breakfast and a program called Good Morning Springfield, and it's business and civic leaders from all over the city. And so we offered to host it this year, and Central's a part of the Chamber of Commerce, and so we're a member. So we had the privilege of hosting Good Morning Springfield with nearly 200 business and civic leaders come in our multipurpose hall. We had a breakfast and had a program. And every month in the program for Good Morning Springfield, they have reports from Greene County and reports from Springfield City Council and a report from Springfield School District. And so when it came time for the Springfield School District report, Dr. Norm Ritter, who's our school superintendent in Springfield, he got up, and it was amazing. The first thing he said was to begin to recount a story. He said, I began to hear about a junior high student who is just really troubled and really having a tough time. And so he said, I decided that I would meet with this student personally. And I sat down, and I was just curious about him. And I said, tell me, I said to this kid, tell me, what is it that you really love doing in life? And he said, this kid looked me back in the eye and said, I love going to Central Assembly on Sunday mornings. Because he said, I can get away from that other life. And there it's like people really love me. That's people who begin to carry the compassion of Jesus. We don't look at little kids and say, oh, what a bother. We look at kids and our guts wrench and our hearts break over what some of them are experiencing. And we're willing to go out of our way and love them even on a Sunday morning. But I want to take it back. Those last two verses pray for laborers to go this great harvest. They introduce the next chapter, but those first couple of three verses where Jesus saw the crowds and was moved with compassion, they in a sense summarize the previous two chapters, chapters 8 and 9, where Matthew doesn't particularly tell stories necessarily in the right order, although the way he tells the stories is accurate, but rather he edits and clusters stories together to make a point. Because Matthew writes not so much as a life of Jesus, but he writes a sermon out of Jesus' life. He's trying to communicate something. And in chapters 8 and 9, he tries to communicate to us in tangible, vivid stories exactly what he summarizes when he finally says, and when Jesus saw the crowds, he was moved with compassion. And so let's go back because we want to answer the question, you know, does that compassion extend to me? And does it extend to you? What about us? How does Jesus, does his heart break? Do his guts wrench when he looks at me? And the answer comes in two wonderful stories. The first one in verse 1 of chapter 8. And it goes like this. When Jesus came down from the mountainside, that's right after the Sermon on the Mount, large crowds followed him. And one man, amidst all the large crowds, there's one guy who had leprosy. A man with leprosy came and knelt before him and said, he said, Lord, if you are willing, you can make me clean. And Jesus reached out his hand and touched the man. I am willing. Will you say that with me? I am willing, he said. Be clean. And immediately he was cured of his leprosy. You can write it right in the box if you're taking notes. I am willing. That is the language of God's broken heart. When he saw the crowds, it's not, I could care less. It's not, I am indifferent. It's not, don't bother me now. It's not, I'm too tired. It's not, I have compassion fatigue. It is, I am willing. I have been praying, God, by the spirit of faith that you could give us, burn those words into our hearts today. I am willing. That's the language of the compassionate heart of Jesus that can touch us when we feel unclean. Leprosy was very contagious and it was very ugly. It would ulcerate the body. It would eat away until fingers and noses and ears fell off and faces contorted. It was very ugly. It was contagious and it made you an outcast and it made you religiously unclean under Jewish law. And in fact, sometimes when lepers who were quarantined and segmented, when they saw others coming, they would just warn them by crying out, unclean, unclean. What a way to self-identify. I'm just unclean. But I want to tell you, sometimes we feel unclean. Sometimes we feel too unclean for Jesus to come and to touch us and to give us a miracle. But I want to tell you, no matter what your track record is, no matter how unworthy you feel, get over it. Jesus forgave you at the cross. His compassion looked past your faults and saw your need, as the song says. This compassion says, I am willing, not only when we feel unclean, but when we feel untouchable. Because the heart-wrenching part of this story to me is that after saying, I am willing, Jesus did a physical demonstration of that willingness that was absolutely stunning. You'd never touch a leprous person. All the priests in the temple and under Jewish law go berserk because it would defile you religiously and ceremonially. And it was an ugly scene. You never touched lepers physically. And many miracles Jesus did by standing away and just speaking a word, and they were healed. He could have stood 10 feet away and just spoke a word, and this guy would be healed. But what did Jesus do? In the full language of "I am willing," he reached out and physically touched him in order to heal him. You know, sometimes we feel untouchable. We feel, "God, I think you, I don't know you even know where I am anymore. I don't think you could possibly reach me." Some of us say, "God, I've walked with you for a while, and you know, I just, all this has got sort of bland and boring, and I'm a little cynical, and I don't know you do that kind of thing in most people's lives anymore. I don't feel touchable." Some of you come to a church like this or another church, and you know, it's too contemporary, or it's too traditional, or the pastor wears a tie, or the pastor doesn't wear a tie, or the pastor shouts and spits, or the pastor just talks to me off a stool, you know, and we get our eyes on the style, and we say, we go to a certain church and say, "I don't think God could ever touch me in this kind of a church." Or we've got someone at an altar praying for us, and we're going, "It's not one of the pastors. And I don't know God could touch me with that person praying for me." And you know what? We just get our eyes on style. We give our eyes on circumstances. And Jesus said, "Will you get your eyes on my heart? Because my heart is screaming out, I'm willing. And I don't care what style of church you go to. I don't care how many prayers have not been answered. I don't care who prays for you or doesn't pray for you. I can still reach you if you hear me say, I'm willing." Or we hear compassion say from the heart of Jesus, "I am willing," when we feel hopeless. Not just unclean and untouchable, but hopeless. It's the tragedy of leprosy in that time. It's not now, but in that time, it was incurable. It was hopeless. And sometimes we pretty much determine our destiny by the measurement of the human resources around us. And when there's no human hope, we succumb to hopelessness. And yet the compassion of Jesus says, there are times I want to confront hopelessness with something that will accomplish what is not humanly possible, but is the fruit of my broken heart for your pain. Or sometimes we need to hear the "I am willing" of Jesus' heart when we feel uncertain. It's amazing that the leper, when he approached Jesus, he didn't come and kneel before Jesus and say, "Lord, if you are capable, if you are able, you can make me clean." He doesn't question God's ability to supernaturally heal him. But he questions his willingness. And that's where probably a lot of us are. "You know, God, I don't know if you will. I don't know if you do this very much. I have many people say, you know, it's easy for me to have faith for other people in the church, but it's so hard to believe that Jesus would do something for me, to have faith for me." And many of us, we don't question Jesus' capability, but just his care. "Are you willing to do it for me?" But I want to hear you. I want to say to you, the voice of Jesus' compassion says, beyond our uncleanness, beyond our untouchableness, the sense we have that he can't touch us where I am, that beyond the sense that I'm helpless and hopeless, and beyond even our uncertainties, I wonder if God's not much more willing than we think he is. I wonder if we're believing him for too little sometimes, when his compassion would scream to us out of a broken heart for you, "I am willing." And then just a few verses later, he goes into a second and final story for us this morning. When Jesus, verse 14, when Jesus came into Peter's house, he saw Peter's mother-in-law lying in bed with a fever. Now, apparently Peter was married and his wife's mom was still living and they were all congregating in her house. You know, they say behind every good man is a great woman and a surprised mother-in-law. And here's a mother-in-law that was possibly fairly surprised how Peter was turning out. Definitely the new step directions he was taking in his life as a follower of Jesus. It said she had a fever. Fevers were fairly common, and once again, to touch someone with a fever made you ritually unclean. And probably many scholars believe she may have had malaria. It was a way of saying she had malaria. And Jesus went in, and what did he do? Always with the untouchable, he touched her. He cared about one of his followers' mother-in-laws. And very individually, he went in, and the fever broke, and she got up and fed them. And so that's how the story. He touched her hand, and the fever left her. She got up, began to wait on them. And then when evening came, this would probably have been the end of the Sabbath day, although he doesn't mention Sabbath here because possibly Matthew is trying to underscore just the extraordinary demands on Jesus. He had, because he was a healer, he just couldn't get people out of his life. It just was nothing but people after people after people. And yet the Jesus who would not succumb to compassion fatigue, he opened up his healing power that night when evening came, when they should have been resting. Many who were demonized, demon-possessed, were brought to him. And he drove out the spirits with the word and healed all the sick. And healed all the sick. Can you imagine evicting evil and reversing illness? Unbelievable, but believable. And he did it out of this heart. Later, Matthew will summarize all of this by saying, when he saw people, he was moved with compassion. Everywhere you see that expression, he was moved with compassion, you'll see a record of Jesus' healing power then flowing to people. His compassion was like the conduit of his power. This was power-packed compassion. He evicted evils. He healed otherwise incurable diseases all evening long. Can you imagine the demonstration of the care and love of the heart of God in that moment? But as I said to you before, Matthew's editing these stories together, not necessarily in chronological order, because he's trying to make a point. And every once in a while, he editorializes for us. And that's what he does in the next verse, verse 17. This was to fulfill what was spoken through the prophet Isaiah. And then he quotes the words we read this morning out of the prophet Isaiah 700 years earlier when he described Jesus' passion on the cross. He, Jesus, took up our infirmities and carried our diseases. This is to fulfill it. Because why can he act on this compassion? Why does he have compassion in the first place with us in our suffering? Compassion in the first place. Because on the cross, Jesus took up our infirmities and he carried our diseases. No wonder he has compassion. He has felt our pain. He does know exactly where we are right now. And in that identification with us, he secured the power to free us and to heal. I'm interested especially in the verbs. He took and carried. He took and carried. He took up our infirmities and he carried our diseases. That's what Jesus was doing on the cross. He, the God of heaven and earth. He, the Lord, who could have stayed so different. The Greeks, in ancient Greek culture, the Greeks had this sense of the apatheia of God, where we get our word apathetic from him, that a divine being to be touched by human suffering or sorrow would mean to diminish his divinity. And that's why, in part, Paul would say in 1 Corinthians chapter 1, the preaching of the cross to the Greeks is foolishness. How can you have a God who's tasted human suffering and still be a God? They couldn't understand the cross, where he took and carried everything that breaks us apart. He was not apathetic. There's no apatheia of God in Christian theology. There's the God who meets us right there, and he takes it and he carries it. The great Bible scholar, English Bible scholar and pastor and author John Stott writes this: pain is endurable, but the seeming indifference of God is not. Pain's endurable, but the seeming indifference of God to that pain is not endurable. Sometimes, he says, we picture God lounging, sometimes perhaps dozing in some celestial deck chair while the hungry millions starve to death. We think of him as an armchair spectator, almost gloating over the world's sufferings while he enjoys his own insulation. The cross, Stott goes on to say, smashes to smithereens this terrible caricature of God. We are not to envision God on a deck chair, but on a cross. The God who allows us to suffer once suffered himself in Christ and continues to suffer with us and for us today. The cross of Christ is the proof of God's personal loving solidarity with us in our pain. Compassion with us in our pain. It's the cross. And I don't think personally it's better illustrated than Then back in the Middle Ages, when the plagues were sweeping across Central Europe, and in a place called Eisenheim, Germany, especially people were being afflicted with what was called the burning sickness or the hellfire disease. Burning sickness that created great burning sensations. It would be sores and abscesses that would come on your body, and then no, of course, human cure for these things. And then something like leprosy actually eat away, you know, whole limbs would fall off the torso of the person, and it was just a horrendous disease. And back in those days, without hospitals, the monasteries and the monks who committed themselves to follow Christ also then would commit themselves to serve those that Christ loved. And so the monasteries would open up for the victims of the burning sickness to come in. It's where we get the word infirmary. It comes out of the monasteries. They took in the infirm. That would be the heart of Jesus. And after the burning sickness was over, there was a very wealthy nobleman whose family had been spared the burning sickness but lived in that area. And he wanted to do something to express his gratitude to the monks for their service to the sick. And so he gave them some money, and the monks decided to commission a great artist by the name of Matthias Grunewald. And he created one of the most unique depictions of the crucifixion on the altarpieces in the monastery chapel. And on the left, you can see people that seem disfigured, the patron saint, Saint Anthony, Saint Andrew, and then others. And medical historians now tell us that that was a pretty accurate depiction of people who had the burning sickness. And above that panel, with people depicted with the burning sickness underneath, were the words, "Where were you, good Jesus? Where were you? And why did you not come to dress my wounds?" And then Grunewald answers the question in the next panel. As there is a picture of the crucifixion, around the cross to the left is Mary and Mary Magdalene, and their heartbreak over Christ on the cross. On the right-hand side, you see John the Baptist, and he's pointing to the cross as if to say, "Behold the Lamb of God who takes away the sins of the world." And then you look at Jesus on the cross. And his body is contorted in a kind of strange way, not natural for just the torture of hanging on his own weight from those nails, but rather his body is contorted, and you look closer and you can see on Jesus' body are the ulcers of the burning sickness. That was Grunewald's answer to the question, "Where were you, Jesus? Where were you, good Jesus? And why did you not come to dress my wounds?" And here is the Jesus who did take and carry. The Jesus who has been there. The Jesus who commissioned kind hands of his followers to touch and nourish and help. The Jesus who looks at you and looks at me and says, "I've been there." No one else probably does understand what you feel, but I took and I carried it all. And I just want you to hear my "I am willing." In our prayer service tonight, I'm going to speak a short amount of time out of these chapters again on another healing miracle and just talk about faith. But after just a short message on faith and a short bit of worship at the beginning, we're going to have some corporate prayer. We're going to pray for our church life together. And I've just really felt today, I've only done this one other time since I pastored here, but we always obviously tonight want to open up to pray for people with needs. And I want to invite those of you who would like to prepare your heart this afternoon. You have experienced a real miracle from God at some point in your life. Maybe a real healing, a real deliverance, maybe a real provision that's just miraculous. And I'd like you, if you would be willing, to help us pray tonight for others that need that. You who have been there yourself. But even more importantly, you know firsthand what it is to counter the Jesus who said to you, "I have been there and I am willing," and he undertook in your life. But I'd like you to stand right now. And I'd like our prayer partners, if they would just come, and as we sing a closing song, even this morning, you need to start a relationship with Jesus. Or there's just a need. You can't walk out of here without coming and having someone pray with you about a great need that would break Jesus' heart because he loves you. And you want to come to the caring Jesus this morning. And I want to say he's willing He's willing today. Don't put him in a box. Don't put a timetable on him. Don't tell him exactly how to do it. Just come open-handed to a God who says, I'm willing today. And we just receive from him. And so as Pastor Tom leads us, will you just come? If you don't need to wait till tonight. Even just prayer this morning, you want to come. Especially if you need also to start that relationship with Jesus. I can tell you for sure, Jesus is willing to forgive you today. And Jesus is willing to start a friendship and a relationship with you. And he wants to come into your life. You come as we sing.